Now, misinformation is spreading rapidly in the lead up to the midterm elections. Beyond just misleading info you might expect to see in a political ad, some candidates and other public figures have shared verifiably false stories. Some candidates have shared urban legends, like a debunked conspiracy of schools letting students use litter boxes in school bathrooms. Others are more serious, like false rumors about what led to the attack on House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul, over the weekend. We're looking at the sources and the ecosystem of the way these false stories spread, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you encounter these conspiracy stories, these false stories about real things going on in the world? Do you push back on them when somebody shares them with you? Do you have questions about how these stories spread? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Dominic Statsua is an assistant professor of political science at Colorado State University. He studies political communication and behavior in the news media environment. Dominic, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Rob.
Let's start with this most recent story, how Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul, attacked a chilling attack, a break-in in his house, hospitalized afterward. And before the police reports come out even, we see false stories spread based on pretty much nothing, making claims that turned out not to be true. Can you talk about this story and how it illustrates what you've looked at in the past when it comes to the spread of misinformation?
Yeah, this one's a troubling one. But like you say, a lot of these things kind of come out of nothing. And I think it's good to kind of keep a perspective on these things, right? Like, there's always been misinformation. There's always been conspiracy theories. There's always been people who are kind of more prone to believe this kind of content than maybe straightforward and more complex explanations. But social media really kind of amplifies a lot of this stuff, allows it to spread a lot faster. And when you add political polarization to the mix, the fact that we're really kind of very tribal these days, we really don't like the other side, that creates certain incentives and certain demand for especially political misinformation. So I think this is really the confluence of two of these things, where, you know, the reality is that, you know, a person stormed into Speaker of the House's home and was trying to locate her. You know, some people called it an assassination attempt. The perpetrator himself mentioned that he didn't want to kill Pelosi, I guess, but he wanted to hurt her kneecaps or whatever. But however you look at it, this is just a very troubling instance of political violence and kind of making light of the situation and kind of coming up with conspiracy theories really kind of amplifies the kind of the polarization and this other kind of misinformation on social media aspect of our current reality.
In the past, I might have expected things like this to be kind of on the fringe. We see in some cases, you know, sitting members of Congress sharing some of these stories, or we worry about social media. The new owner of a social media outlet, Elon Musk, on Twitter for a while had shared one of these made-up news stories about this. Does it make a difference that prominent, wealthy, or connected political figures are getting in the game now and sharing these things?
It certainly makes a difference. That's really the most troubling part of this whole situation is, like you said, you know, historically, these kind of views were marginalized, right? People would kind of exchange like newsletters or something, maybe gather at the Radisson by the airport or something once in a while. The fellow conspiracy theorists would kind of come out of the basements and kind of gather together and discuss their shared views. But this wasn't out in the open. This wasn't out in the mainstream. And it certainly wasn't promoted by important political or kind of cultural figures. That phenomenon really makes it a lot worse, right? Elon Musk tweeting essentially like a fake news site article about the situation makes a big difference because he's an influential person. He has a big following. President Trump's son, Donald Jr., tweeted a very tasteless kind of joke at the situation. That matters. A lot of Republican candidates, right? Governor of Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, made fun of the situation. Aspiring political candidate in Arizona, right? Carrie Lake talked about this. When we have so many political and cultural elites amplify misinformation, it really makes a difference, because a lot of the public opinion formation really comes top down, right? We tend to follow the leaders. We tend to follow the people who we trust, who we can identify with. And this really makes a big difference. It allows it to become more mainstream, and it makes it okay.
One, I guess, tactical advantage that misinformation has, and I've been watching this since, you know, a lot of school shootings years ago, where in the media, we can only talk about what we know is happening. So a lot of people are hungry for information and refreshing news sites and seeing nothing change and nothing change. But if somebody wants to make up a story and put it out there, they can do it as fast as they want. So that ends up having, in some ways, a competitive advantage. It gives new, not information, I guess it gives a new read on the story while people are maybe bored with the news outlets saying the same thing. Is that still, that asymmetry still there?
I think part of it for sure, right? There's different motivations why people create this content. Like I mentioned earlier, part of the motivation is frequently political. Part of the motivation is kind of driven by how polarized our politics have become recently, how amped up and kind of dialed up we always are about politics, especially among people who kind of follow the news and get engaged in the public sphere. So there's this political motivation to it that serves as a motivator for kind of creating maybe some of this content and sharing this content for some people. But for other people, it's not really political, right? It's financial. So when you kind of go back to kind of our interest as a society in misinformation, a lot of this got really started in 2016, right? And the fake news that emerged during the presidential election cycle and the kind of made up stories, for example, like the one about Pope Francis endorsing Donald Trump, which obviously didn't happen, that story getting a lot of traction on social media, especially on Facebook. So that kind of sparked our interest, right, in this whole topic. And kind of who came up with that story, right? A lot of the 2016 misinformation and fake news was created by essentially unemployed teens in Macedonia, mm-hmm. who were making up news content, trying to come up with charged political news that would make people click on the link, go to a site in order for them to monetize Google ads from said sites. So the motivation for them wasn't really political per se. They created content for both the left and the right. The content on the right spread more on social media, so they were able to monetize that better. So there's all kinds of considerations here, right? Some people just want to make money and want to essentially take advantage of how polarized and kind of vulnerable and gullible some people are. Other people, it's more of a propaganda thing, motivating the base, trying to really make a difference politically. And acting with political goals in mind. So it's just a very complex landscape, really.
We're talking to Dominic Statsua from Colorado State University, political science professor there, looking at the spread of misinformation always. And in this lead up to the midterm elections, you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think could work to slow the spread of misinformation? Do you push back when you see a false news story maybe shared by someone you know on social media? Does it work when you do, or does it just start more arguments? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up a conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Dominic Statsua, assistant professor of political science at Colorado State University, with us today looking at how misinformation spreads quickly and what we can do to push back against it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jackie is with us in Milwaukee. Jackie, hi.
Hi. This topic really hits home with me. My father is a Christian, hard worker, honest man. And he would always forward these emails, about Trump and all this stuff, all this fake stuff that I would reply and show the actual truth, whether it was Snopes or the full video, things like that. And I would be like, you know, they keep sending you stuff that you know is false. Why are you listening? And, don't you realize that they have an agenda? And I because of that, I don't trust Republicans at all, and I'm very angry. I haven't talked to my father in almost a year now.
Jackie, thanks. I'm sorry to hear about that difficult time in your family. Dominic, are there effective ways that individuals can say, hey, that thing you're sharing, it's false?
You know, if there was one simple solution to this problem, I would love to share it with you. But unfortunately, there isn't one. Having a good faith conversation, trying to kind of reassure the person that you kind of get where they're coming from, maybe reassure some of their values and beliefs without kind of attacking them, without ridiculing them, can help. But a lot of these things are just deeper, right? It's not really about the misinformation, that specific piece of misinformation per se, right? So frequently people have this tendency of just kind of correcting that information and hoping that just giving people the correct facts will matter. But it's not just about the facts. It's about the underlying values. It's about where that information is coming from and the purpose of that information, including misinformation, right? And frequently it serves this important purpose of reassuring somebody in kind of their political values, their political beliefs. It makes them feel good to be Team Republican or Team Democrat. And when you're faced with these kind of more identity-based things, right, this isn't just about beliefs. It's more about identities and who you are. It's very difficult to correct this thing. It's very difficult to kind of persuade somebody that they're maybe wrong. It's certainly worth to have a conversation. It's definitely worth to try to engage and really have a good faith discussion. But frequently, you will not end up persuading even your loved ones, because it's just a very difficult situation with many layers, including psychological and political motivations that are just so difficult to crack.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Randy joins us now in Roberts. Randy, hi. Are you there, Randy? I think we lost him. Let's try Blake in Mosinee. Blake, hi.
Hi, I was just calling to talk about how I view, certain platforms like TikTok and YouTube and, other social media content. And I kind of noticed how certain platforms like this, they kind of have a tendency to, send people through certain tunnels, I guess, would be the only way I could describe it.
Sure.
You view the content that you're going to be most likely to watch for longer periods of time, and I think that kind of stems into people, say if they're a Republican, they'd be watching more content that it,
I gotcha, Blake. Thanks a lot for that call. Dominic, the algorithmic rabbit holes that some platforms send us down, how important are they to some of these false stories spreading?
So I don't think we should overestimate their importance, because ultimately there is a lot of demand for misinformation, right? And there's some research on that showing that even when platforms like Facebook go down, for example, I have a research project where we look at what happened during the outage of Facebook last year. What ended up happening is there was skyrocketing traffic towards some known peddlers of misinformation, such as InfoWars and other websites like that. So there's a lot of kind of underlying demand for this stuff. But rabbit holes and algorithms definitely make things worse, right? We have to remember that these platforms are free. And when something is free, frequently you are, as a user, the product, right? Your attention is what's being sold to advertisers, right? So these platforms essentially have a vested interest in ensuring that you stay on for as long as you can. So they look at your behavior, right? They look at what you're more likely to kind of engage with, what you're more likely to share, to comment on, to like, and then they send you down that rabbit hole frequently. And I think that's definitely something that happens on something like YouTube. I'm less familiar with TikTok. Part of the reason why we know less about TikTok is because they're just less likely to share any kind of data with researchers. But I think there's definitely some of that happening, and that doesn't make things better. But ultimately, it's essentially going back to the ecosystem of information right now, right? And if our attention is being monetized by these platforms for the purposes of selling ads, they have a vested interest in doing whatever it takes for you to be on the platform. And frequently what keeps your attention, what gets you engaged, right, what makes you comment and share, is not really the neutral or balanced content. It's the most extreme, partisan, overhyped content, right? That's really what gets people motivated. So when you consider these incentives, it's no longer the information landscape looks the way it does.
Thanks for that call, Blake. And just our last few moments, Dominic, you mentioned there's no one easy solution here. What would you see as the best starting point to try to turn the tide against this bad information?
I think we can do a lot as individuals, you know, being vigilant, being skeptical, being aware of the fact that we're frequently, people are trying to kind of capitalize on our partisan political commitments. So just being vigilant, remembering that, you know, just because something we see online exists and maybe it reinforces some of our beliefs, that doesn't mean it's true. So really being careful about really pressing that share button or retweet button, really being, you know, thoughtful about double checking before we share something. If nobody is really, none of the verified websites, right, none of the verified news outlets actually report on a situation you found posted on Facebook, then it's probably too good to be true or maybe made up. So just be vigilant. And I think in general, just really altering some of your news consumption patterns, really maybe going back to some traditional, especially local news sources. So maybe avoiding things like cable, right? Avoiding maybe the depths of Twitter and YouTube.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to Dominic Statsua, assistant professor of political science at Colorado State University, with us today looking at how misinformation spreads so quickly and how to turn things around.